Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and the champagne on my podium. Hey, these get better every week. It's Dave Vitti.
Hello, how are you?
Very good, thanks. Now, Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Now then, Dave, Champagne Dave, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you, Mr. Plato. Yourself?
Do you know what? Not bad. I didn't have a particularly good weekend at Brands Hatch. Looked in the bag of talent and funny enough, it had a hole in the bottom.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, I think you're being a little bit harsh on yourself, but I have to say that myself and Des, who I work with, we had a thoroughly nice day. Thank you very much. Courtesy of BTC Hospitality, and we had a really nice day in the paddock. And, you know, I mean, we enjoyed ourselves, even if you didn't.
Well, do you know what? I did enjoy myself, but not as much as my teammate, the one and only Josh Cook, who had two fantastic wins. So for all of us, for the team, for BTC, for Adrian Flux, it was a fantastic day.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say close but no cigar, but I wasn't even close. And I got no cigar.
And you couldn't find any cigars or anything. But anyway, more about that later. I'm excited about today, but I'm not quite sure what I can say. I feel almost like we're secretive and being under wraps, Jason Plato.
Well, let's find out. So our guest today is a very dear friend of mine, and he's a gentleman who for many years has been something of an enigma. Some say he doth travel faster than the wind and possess the turning circle of a Hackney carriage. Some say he shaves his ear and nostril hair to improve his drag coefficient by 0.3%. All we know is he's called the original Stig. It's Perry McCarthy.
Good to be with you guys, Jace. Lovely to see you as always.
And you, mate. How are you?
I'm all right. Listen, do you need a couple more seconds to say Adrian Flux Insurance again or anything?
Because I can wait. No, we're contractually obliged to do it at the end as well, Perry, so it's fine. Yeah. We've done our bit for now. Yeah. We sort of bookend it with the plug.
Okay, good. Well, I mean, would it help if I said it a couple of times?
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
Household, cars, life, anything. Is that helping?
Mate, as always, you are a pro.
Please send your check to Essex.
How long is it since you two gentlemen have seen each other?
Well, do you know what? Unfortunately, we get together. We bump into each other at race circuits a fair bit. But, and we'll get onto this later in the podcast, but every year there's this amazing Christmas lunch, which Perry is the chairman of this really fantastic group. And we'll talk about that later. But of course, with lockdown and stuff, we've not had one of these amazing events, which takes about a week to get out your system, I might say. but more of that later. But when did we speak to each other last? A couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
It was about book stuff, wasn't it? It was about book stuff.
It was. Oh, that's right. Because of the audio book and stuff. And we were talking about that, which is good to talk about an audio book. I've got mine on fast forward. Mine actually took longer to record than my Formula One career.
Now, talking of which, come on, how on earth does a lad from Stepney, East London, end up being a Formula One driver? How does it work? I know the story, but tell us.
Well, it was either that or going into the world of being a criminal. So I had to make a decision fairly early on, you know. But my old man always gave me some advice, actually, because he was a little bit edgy. And he just said, son, always remember, if you're being chased by the police and they've got those police dogs and you run across a field with those dogs behind you, never crawl through a tunnel, run across one of those seesaws and dive through a hoop because they're trained for that.
I love the way that you describe your dad as edgy.
Yeah, I always liked cars when I was a kid, and I wasn't particularly mega at sports, to be quite honest, you know, but I was drawing a lot. One of my subjects was art, and normally portraits, but a friend of mine followed motor racing, and he used to bring in this brilliant magazine called Grand Prix International, and I started drawing the cars. Yeah. I loved them, and then started reading about these drivers. And that fit right in with how I was on the road. Yeah, because I was a little bit naughty on the road, to be quite frank. But, you know, you get to meet a lot of the Essex police like that. They gave me quite a bit of advice. Some of it started with 3 years. But that was just good. And then I said, do you know what? I'm going to go to Brands Hatch Racing. And I did that. And I went around with the chief instructor, a guy called Les Ager, who was a lovely guy. And
how old were you there?
I was 18.
Okay.
Yeah, so very, very late, you know. But then, so I was really ragged, you know. He got
of course. Sorry to interrupt, but no karting career.
No, so nothing.
So straight in, straight in.
Straight in from off the street. So he got in. He must have been about 60 years old at that time. Yeah, and he took me around and showed me what he can do. And I'm sitting there thinking, this old sod has lost his mind. He's gone. I'm sitting there and he's talking to me. I don't know if you ever met Les, but he had a lovely way of speaking. He said, all right, my dear. All right, now just hold on. I'm sitting there. My fingernails have gone through the seat. And I got the point. And then I jumped in the car and I managed to replicate pretty much everything he'd done. And I went very quickly. And that was it. He dragged me out and just said, look, you know, he said I was the best he'd ever seen. I mean, he'd only started 2 days earlier, but
his sight was as good as Stevie Watt Wonder's.
Exactly. But that was it. And that gave me the encouragement. And then he started making phone calls. And then I said, right, I needed to find out how to get in. But he needed money, as you very well know. So I went to work on North Sea Oil Rigs for 2 years and then coming back, finishing off my A-levels, which was law, economics, art, and sociology. But I had to drop sociology because of the time, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So then I did 2 years, 2.5 years, I think it was, in the end, on the rigs, come back with some money, went to Jubilee Racing, went out, was very quick. But
this is Formula Ford 1600.
I'm sorry, Formula Ford 1600.
Yeah.
But I was like 21 now by the time I'm on track. You know, it had taken that long to get the money together.
Yeah.
First year, set 3 pole positions out of 6 races, but I crashed in everything because I was no good, you know. Yeah. But then the following year, got my act together, and I think I won 10 out of 20, won the British Championship. And that was it. I was on the way. So, again, you know, it's great speaking to you because you know the deals. You know my background. I know yours. It was all about knocking on doors, trying to check anybody up for some money to keep going, making phone calls, sending out proposals, time and time again, all the way through the career. And that gets so depressing. I'll tell you one quick story. I know I'm going on, but you're going to love this story. So you're getting, believe me, negative feedback all the time. You know, I understand the word no in 37 different languages, right? But there's one minute where you're getting into somebody and you think, oh, we're on the way. And one day, Barclays Bank International agreed to see me. And I've sat down with their directors and I'm pitching them F3 next year because I've just won the championship immediately, pretty much. And I'm on the way and they're really interested. And anyway, about a week later, there's an envelope come through the post, franked, you know, at the top on the envelope, Barclays Bank International. So I've gone, oh. So I've opened the envelope. It's gone, dear Perry, thanks so much for popping in. Da-da-da-da. Very interesting. Wishing you luck. But unfortunately, on this occasion, we won't be able to help. So you go, okay, well, I knew it was a big ask, but I'm an optimist. And you think anyway. So more phone calls, more walking around, months passed, etc. All of a sudden, another envelope comes through the door. Barclays Bank International. This is great. I've gone, hello. So I'm desperate. I've got no money. Absolutely desperate. I've torn the envelope open. I've ripped the paper out and I've read it. It's got, dear Perry, I've gone, encouraging start. It said, you may recall that the last time you come in looking for sponsorship, sadly, we were of the opinion back then that we would be unable to help. However, heart's going, here we go, F1, here I come. However, we've looked at it again, and I'm sorry to tell you, we still can't help.
No! You never got that letter.
I swear my life, I got that letter. And I've looked at this, and I've gone, are you having a laugh? What are they sitting around going, a bit bored today? What should we do? You know that bloke keep coming. Let's wind him up.
Let's kick him again.
Unbelievable. You know, that's, I mean, I can look back and laugh at it now, but when you're a youngster with all the dreams and ambition and you've just been working so hard, you hang on for any compliment. You hang on for any chance, any gap, anything. Mm. And there's a lot of people out there these days that don't realize that. But that's what it means to you. Yeah. And the number one thing I think with any creative career, anything where you're setting your sights high, the only way you can survive is actually if you can survive disappointment time and time again. Yeah.
I tell you what, Perry, I've got a bit of a theory on this, that all successful people that I know, whether they be engineers or business people or all the rest of it, all those which make it, i.e. achieve what they set out to do, they're not normal people. I honestly believe they're all quite highly on the spectrum because the constant nose and hitting your head on a brick wall, there's just too much of it. And I think a not so, you know, complicated person with extreme focus just would get to the point, God, you know what, it's too hard, this. And that's true, isn't it? Do you not think?
Well, I do. I mean, you know, I was talking to Karen, my wife, as you, who you know, obviously. Yeah. And I just said, you know, this career is full of ups and downs. I said, but don't worry, I'm sure the ups are going to come anytime soon.
But, you know, the other thing as well about this, Perry, is the fact that not only is it an incredible story and the fact that you were into it so late and the fact that you had the perseverance and the self-belief to actually stick with it, but also, I suppose, the risk involved was massive because it wasn't like, you know, you were obviously needing the funds in order to progress your career and your development, but that in itself was a very risky investment, was it not? I mean, with huge potential chance of failure.
I think one of the greatest benefits of not being that bright about life when you're younger is you don't see it as that kind of risk because you don't evaluate. You don't think, oh, I'm going to end up at 30 with nothing and in debt and no career. It's a question of complete and absolute belief. And, you know, this may come across wrong to the listeners. So I hope it doesn't. But the thing that got me through is that I was completely convinced from day one I was an F1 driver. There was to it.
And you're right to be convinced.
Yeah. Well, it could have gone better, obviously, Jason. But, slightly.
So, Perry, talk to us about how the Top Gear thing happened, because obviously for many people, you know, that's how you're best known sort of in your recent career. How on earth does that come about? Obviously from a motorsport background, but what was the introduction?
It's, you know, because of the ups and downs of my career and, you know, all the stories were, you know, pretty well known. A lot of the boys used to say, Pell, you've got to write a book, you know, so I did. Flat out, flat broke, normally $9.99, published by Haynes, available in a bookshop near you.
And I have to say, and I'm not just burning smoke up your proverbial, it's a very, very, very brilliant book. It's so funny. It's proper tears down your face.
Well, thanks, Jason. It's going really well. We sold another copy just last month. Anyway, it was at the, and Jason was actually there. It was at my book launch in July, wasn't it, 2002? And we had this great big party. We had a fantastic party at the Audi dealership opposite the Ritz.
That's it.
Do you remember? You were there because you're on the video, And it was there that Jeremy Clarkson was there and also Andy. Yeah, a lot of friends come out.
Andy Wilman,
And F1 and everything to be there with me and at the adjacent. And it was there that Jeremy said, hey, listen, Top Gear had been off air for quite a long time by then. So Jeremy said, hey, we're going to be bringing Top Gear back and we've got this idea for you to be a secret, mysterious racing driver. And as you know, first thing was all in black. He said, and you'll be dressed in a black boots, black overalls, black gloves, a black crash helmet, a black visor, and we're going to call you the Gimp.
No, is that right? That was the original name.
Yeah, I said, no, you're not. And they were really serious. And I said, look, I've been in motor racing for 20 years by then. I said, I know everything comes out. That's it. Mm. So finally they agreed it. And we agreed on being called the Stig. The funny thing was, is I remember discussing it and they said, you've got to keep this secret. So I said, I understand. I will keep it secret. They said, you can't tell anybody. So I said, well, I'm going to have to tell the wife. And they said, no, you can't tell the wife.
Is that right?
Yeah. And I said, no, trust me. I'm going to be telling Karen. And they said, well, you can't tell Karen. I said, no, trust me. I'm going to. They said, why? I said, mate, you try sneaking out of the house 6 o'clock in the morning, dressed for magic foot in black leather. They're saying, don't worry, darling. Should be home by about midnight, but nothing's going on. He said, I see your point. You can tell Karen.
I'll tell you what, sorry to interrupt. Honest to God, nobody knew. I didn't know. Nobody knew until it was revealed, actually. Now, how on earth did that happen?
We didn't
know. How did you keep that secret?
But I must say, an old mate of ours, because I've got bandy legs and I always folded my arms.
Is that right?
The first text message I got after the first show was from my career. Yeah.
And right?
Yeah. And it just said, morning, Stiggy.
No way.
But what made me laugh was that they've sat down and we just never realized how big the show was going to be, of course. Yeah. And I think by the end of the year, Who is the Stig was inside the top 10 questions asked on the internet, not in the UK, on the internet. I think I was just behind, is there a God and am I pregnant?
Because it was a global phenomenon.
It was massive. Yeah. It was really, really big. Yeah.
How many years was that then, Perry? So obviously, did that incarnation of Top Gear start in 2002? And then your tenure ran till when?
No, I came out of it after a year because it just wasn't my cup of tea.
Oh, okay.
You know, I'm not a test driver. You know, it was kind of, and the other thing was is that we had this thing where it was Duncan Hamilton's priceless D-type Le Mans winning Jaguar.
Yeah.
And the son, okay, I didn't like him, but God rest his soul, he passed away recently, Adrian Hamilton.
Yeah.
But he went to the press afterwards saying, I destroyed the car and the gearbox and the which is rubbish.
Mm.
But the thing is, there was a particular journalist that decided not to call me about it, put it in the press that Perry McCarthy, the Stig, has damaged this car. And I was really annoyed about it.
Mm.
And I just, you know, I'm not really sure I want to stay around for all this. And plus the fact, Jason and I are commercial animals. I looked at an increase on the commercial deal. They didn't want to know. So that was it. And I was riding for Andy anyway, who were very generous.
Yeah.
And that was a wonderful relationship. So I was already testing, training, traveling. And I thought, do you know what? You know, this has been a great thing to have done.
Yeah.
To have kicked off this Stig thing.
Yeah. Yes. Great. Yes.
And then it's come in handy commercially since then.
Yeah,
I bet. So, yeah, actually, as it turned out, from something which was a sort of opportune moment at the Ritz and whatever like that with Clarkson, ended up being a part of your career, which has been very beneficial.
Without sounding preachy, and I'm probably saying this for not the benefit of just all the listeners, but there are going to be people who want to be racing drivers, youngsters who are coming in.
Mm.
And the whole thing is about spotting opportunity or creating opportunities.
Mm.
You know, nobody can come into this unless they've got a terribly wealthy family and think they are so great they can just drive. Yeah, they've got to be at the center of making things happen to get that drive.
Mm.
You know, that's the deal.
So anyway, Perry, I tell you what, all our guests on here, one of the things we're really interested about, you know, their love or their hatred or whatever it is about cars. Presumably when you were a kid, cars were a thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's the aesthetics. You know, I love design. I always have done. I'm like that here at home with the furniture. And it's just that kind of, you know, we're all kind of good at something. And and I like to believe I've got that eye. I mean, I'm very lucky that I've got a lot of woodland here, and I really enjoy cutting some of the trees back in the fields to have the lights coming across from the sky in a different way and all this kind of stuff. So I enjoy that kind of stuff, and cars meant that to me. There is the sheer joy, that performance, that speed, which was the thrill, the excitement, the challenge, but also the noise, you know?
Yeah.
You'd start saying, wow, and that was the attraction to motor racing, a V8, a V10, a V12. You know, but of course,
and the smell as well.
Yeah,
but now, of course, we've got Formula E.
Yeah. Hey, so tell me the first car that as a kid you lusted after. What was it? Do you remember?
Funny enough, I was probably influenced by my old man because it was always Jags. You know, the ones they used to use in the getaway movies.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the only one who took a pair of stockings with him to go pop down the shops. Over the head.
Yeah.
No, I guess I had a penchant, a real kind of, I really loved the Jags. They were quite grand, you know?
Yeah.
But as I got a little bit older, then I still stayed on the Jags. It was the E-Type that, from 18 onward that I was then thinking E-Type, you know?
Yeah,
So, I think that was, that was definitely, it's like Frank Sinatra, to be quite honest. It's like that was so drilled into me as a kid.
Mm.
Is that when I hear Frank now, it's like, it's fantastic. I still, I love nearly all types of music, not so much rap, not so much country and Western.
And certainly not together.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was your first car? The first car you bought?
I was going to say, because there's one thing in terms of what you lust after, but the reality of what you can actually get your hands on are two very different things. So, yeah, what was it? What was the first set of wheels?
It was a nasty, mangy, 90-pound piece of crap 1.1 Ford Escort.
Hold on. You might upset Dave now. He's a big Ford lover.
We're talking a Mark II or Mark One?
Mark One. Yeah, okay. But you may be aware then that there was a particular problem with those cars that were painted in a color called Silver Fox. The problem was is that the Silver Fox didn't stay on the car. So it used to fall off, and there were big areas where you could see the primer. And it was like the making of alopecia, you know? And once I'd done my special wheel nut extensions, plastic wheel nut extensions, and sprayed the wheel silver, it was a piece of garbage, you know?
Right.
But I was on the road and you know, starting to practice. One of the things that was actually quite nice for me, in a way, was that I actually remember that first ever time on a racing circuit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I mean, we'll go to race circuits now, you know, being in a really fast car. And the circuit always ends up being small because you know you're going to be using all of it, or you chew up the straights really fast. But for me, this kid that never even watched motor racing really that much, you know, and I'm on this circuit. It was like a kind of massive experience. It was overwhelming.
And that's imprinted in you now, imprinted in your head.
It really is, because the funny thing is that I never lost that sense of awe when I approached a circuit for the 100,000th time or whatever, just thinking, God, no matter what happens, no matter what aggravation I'm going through in life, I'm a really lucky boy that this is still keeping me with those dreams to go forward and fighting against the very best. And sometimes beating them as well. So that was great.
I must admit, I feel like that every time, even though I've been there, I don't know, a million times, when I drive through the gates at Silverstone, it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of like a gladiatorial amphitheatre, isn't it? You feel as if you're entering the Colosseum, and it's your heartbeat starts rising and you know what's going to be coming.
This is, I guess, a question to both of you, really. During each of your respective careers, have you ever had a wobble in your confidence in terms of, you know, because it is about self-belief and it is about that confidence to actually push yourself and the car to the limit. Have you ever had a moment where you've kind of doubted yourself and kind of thought, I'm not sure I can do this anymore?
You first, James.
It's a brilliant question, actually. And until recently, and I mean in the last four years, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, you know, I beg your pardon. But I must admit the last 3-4 years, you know, you have some bad times and, I mean, there are little moments where you go, Jesus Christ, you know, is it me? You know, and you do question yourself. However, because of the way we're programmed, you pick yourself up very quickly and you dust yourself off. However, back in the day, you'd obviously look at yourself in the mirror and go, what happened there?
Mm-hmm.
There is a little bit, which is just the little, you know, the chimp on the shoulder. He's chirping away very gently the older you get, I think.
Mm.
But I can bat him off, but I still have.
And you feel it creeping in a little bit.
Yeah, I must admit I do. And that's probably a bit of pressure I'm putting on myself. And also you go, man, I'm 55 this year. What am I doing? But then I look at the data and I go, well, yeah, it's all right.
Yeah.
How about you, Pell? Did you have any little moments? I guess not in your early days like me.
I think that I was always, I would probably, and I must say sometimes mistakenly, look to me rather than the car an awful lot of the time, thinking that I can make more of a difference. It's got to be me, you know, find another 10th, find another 2 10ths. But, you know, the confidence came and came. But there was one moment one very, very small moment where I'd completely lost confidence. But I'll explain it very, very quickly. I was in Formula 3 and Adrian Reynard asked me to test some development suspension on a different car. And I did, and I was going into club, and you may recall that was flat back then.
Yeah,
and the suspension collapsed. I took 5 layers of catch fencing down. One of the catch fencing bars hit me in the head, which broke the crash helmet. The car was totally destroyed. I got out, I blood all over my face, everything else. So I walked away, but I'd taken a good blow to the head. 2 days later, my own team with Adrian again were developing some different rear suspension. Yeah. This time we were at Snetterton. And you remember the old Russell chicane.
Edgy.
Which was daunting.
Yeah,
they've just flat out and you had to get it absolutely
right. Yeah, yeah.
And I was coming in, you're probably putting 140 there. And as I turned in, click, and the right rear suspension collapsed. And I hit the wall so hard, it took the barrier and the support post with all the concrete out the ground and moved it back by 2 foot.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I was airborne and then landed on the track upside down. And I was unconscious. And then they brought me around with smelling salts and dragged me off because obviously track time's money.
Get him off the track.
Get him off the track. Okay, carry on. And then about 3 days later, we had the Cellnet Super Prix, the biggest race of the year.
Yeah.
Now, these days, as you very well know, I wouldn't have been let within 2 miles of that car.
No.
But I got in and I went out and I did not know what I was doing.
Is that right?
Yeah. I was doing about 50 miles an hour. This has got a super ending and it's the goddamn shit. And I retired and went to Barbados and retired as a billionaire. No, it's not that ending. And I went out onto the track and I actually was frightened. And yeah, I wasn't used to that feeling. And I was so frightened. I came in and my hands were totally shaking. You know, I just sat there and I was terrified on several different levels. I was terrified about the fact that I was so frightened because my career's over.
Yeah.
And I just sat there saying to myself, what do you want to do? Do you want to? And the team, I swear to you, they knew something was wrong. They totally left me alone.
Oh, did they? Wow.
And I said, well, what do you want to be? You want to be a racing driver? What do you want to be? You've got to go fast. Do you want to be a racing driver? And then somewhere through all that jumble from all those impacts on the head, somehow it all just connected for a moment. And I just went, I'm back, you know?
Yeah.
I start the car. And I swear to you, it's got a stroke. And bang, went out. I mean, we've got a couple of minutes left of qualifying.
Yeah.
Did a round, black pole.
Have that.
Then came in, didn't know what I was doing again, got out of the car, still didn't know what I was doing, was crying. And believe me, I don't cry that much, unless it's a good lassie film, you know? That was how messed up my head was.
But yeah, that's concussion, isn't it? That's concussion.
It come back for just that moment to just start the car, go. Yeah. I've forgotten all about it. That was it. And then it all came back.
Yeah.
And then I went into the race the following day. I was a real mess, managed to come fourth. But these days, quite rightly so, though. That was the only time I'd ever been frightened, except for when I got in the Andrea Moda Monaco, and then Spa.
Spa's enough to scare anybody, though, isn't it?
Well, that's quite a big story, isn't the Spa one, where it was Moreno. Yeah. What wasn't it? Was it Moreno? They'd taken some bits off his car or something like that?
Yeah. I knew the car wasn't going to last long, so I tried to take Eau Rouge flat immediately.
I was
confident I could do that.
Yeah.
But as I turned in, and you'll back me up on this, Joseph, as I turned in, I felt it way too stiff on the steering wheel. Now, any other car, I probably would have kept my foot in, thinking I'll brave it out, you'll do it. But this, the alarm bells went off, and I hit the brakes as hard as I could, but I'm already at the bottom of the hill now.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm trying to turn, and you can imagine this entire story happened inside 1.5 seconds. And it finally turned. Yeah, this is terribly dramatic, but it's true. It turned, I just missed the wall, you know? And I came up over the top, and then suddenly, because I'm now so much slower, I'm steering the car. So I thought, okay, So I went a bit faster.
Couldn't can't steer it.
So I know what's wrong, or guessing what's wrong, steering rack. So I came into the pits,
yeah,
and I pulled up and I said to them, guys, I think the steering rack's flexing, you know? And they said, oh, we know. I said, how do you know that? So they said, oh, we tested that on Roberto's car last week. So I said, so you took it off there and put it on my car for qualifying at Spa? Yeah.
Well, who was it? Who were the other drivers, the UK guys, who basically said to you, Perry, please don't get in that car? Who was that? Was it Warwick? Or might be Damon or someone?
Yeah, a few of them were already saying it. But the funny thing is, as a journalist on that particular occasion, that I was just about to get in the car, there was an F1 journalist called Tony Dodgins saying, Perry,
yeah,
don't get in the car. I've got a terrible feeling. And I said, Tony, I said, I've got a bad feeling, but you can't let go. This is a chance.
Can you imagine, Dave? Can you imagine being told that of a journo and then jumping in it? Can you imagine?
I know, absolutely. But what this sort of interestingly sort of boils down to, it's where the fear of potentially getting hurt creeps into your head is presumably the source of the wobble. I mean, just to give you a very, very, very simplistic sort of example from my own thing. When I was a kid, I was born and brought up in Hong Kong. I was in the sunshine. I used to do somersaults and stuff off the diving board, right? And I used to do it all day long, age 6, 7, 8, whatever. I go frontwards, backwards or whatever, and I used to love it. And one day I got it wrong and I went smack on my back and it really hurt me and it winded myself. I never did it again.
Exactly.
Because at that point, and what I should have done is got straight, a bit like getting straight back on. And I never did, and it completely took my confidence away, and I could never do it again. And it was just that whole, and it's that fear of getting hurt which prevented me from doing it.
I think that there's an old expression that says, and I totally understand what you're saying, Dave, you know, I really do. But the thing is that if it's your career and if you feel like that, you're finished in motor racing.
Of course.
That's what you do. And I think that this is, somebody once said that racing drivers need a limited imagination. Because I'm kind of outside the car, I'm quite careful thinking, okay, what are these guys doing? What's happening here? What's happening there? To a very large degree, once you get in that car and close the visor, you've got to stop thinking about that.
Yeah.
Because if you're trying to second guess what can happen in the team, you'll tighten up, you won't be at your top. And you know, if I'm against Jason and if I'm tightening up, he's going to annihilate me and vice versa. You know, no question about it.
Because the margins are so slight.
That's it. It's tiny, tiny bits. And, you know, you said, right, you said maybe 45 minutes ago, oh, I'll just drive 2/10 faster. That sounds easy. Sometimes it's absolutely impossible. And you think 2/10 of a second, surely that's easy to find. Surely I can find that in every corner. Sometimes it's just impossible. It's not available for you to go 2/10 faster or even 1/10. It's amazing, isn't it? But other times you then just tune in a bit more. And it comes. It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. It's. But these are the things that. Do you know something? Actually, you know, when you're talking about the motivation and the desire, because you know, to overcome the bad things and try to get to the top, you know, you enjoy it. Obviously, you enjoy the competition. But for me personally, I rather feel that the entire essence of motor racing has been great because it has challenged me on every single level, every day of the week.
Mentally and physically.
To try to be in the sport or try to be better or try to beat my contemporaries or try to make the team better or try to make the car better. And I absolutely swear to you that, you know, after all this trying and all this focus and everything else, I don't know about you, Jase, I think I'm probably even wrong here. I think I'd be lucky to say I've ever done one very close to completely perfect lap.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, well, maybe it's one. But yeah, I don't think ever. I don't think there is such a thing.
No, we've probably done some corkers between us.
But,
you know.
A bit of pat on the back. Oh, that was a good one. Well, you left half a 10th there. No, I don't think I did.
But that's the thing, isn't it? That's the thing. And it always... You know, I've often said this to people when I've given speeches, is that it always, that's if you want it, it demands more of you all the time. And I like that focus, You know, I really like that sense of achievement when you are, you know, walking down a pit lane, you've got the pole, or when you've won a race or something like that. It's really great. And it that kind of justifies what you're about, because you can't win them all.
So look, here's a question for you.
Yeah.
You've just won. You've just won a big race. You've sprayed some good champagne. You've kissed a really pretty girl. The fans are all over you. And you've now got to, you've got a choice of car, you've got a choice of music, and you can go wherever the hell you want. So it's your, it's kind of your kind of
fantasy drive.
Your fantasy drive. So where are you? Where are you going to? What you're driving and what you're listening to?
Well, I'll try to answer it. The only thing is, though, is that after setting the scene there, I wouldn't be driving anywhere. I'd be down the pub. finishing the night off there, to be quite frank. But in that wonderful scenario you've painted, I think it would be, do you know, it's terrible. I'm going to revert to the E-Type.
Yeah.
No, but not wrong with that.
The one that's been modified a bit that actually steers, you know, and it'd have to be, you know, nice weather and lovely country roads. So perhaps Greece, and then going down to a beautiful restaurant on the shore, and then reading your book. I think that would probably be it, Jason.
Not a bit of Frank Sinatra instead of the order book.
I'd have a bit of Frank Sinatra while I read your book. And yeah, that would be perfect, mate.
I'm going to book a cheeky little table for three at that Taverna Perry, and we will see you there for some souvlaki and whatever they drink as well in Greece.
Oh, we can smash some plates. We can smash plates, can't we?
We can smash anything we like, Jason. And on that note, I think you need to take us out.
Well, that's it, unfortunately, for this week's Fuel and Ground, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, big thanks, but a huge thanks to our very special guest this week, the one and only Mr. Perry McCarthy.
Thanks, Dave. Jason, great to see you.
Perry, lovely to have you on. Thank you very much indeed. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you like what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share the podcast on all your socials.
And again, thanks for listening, guys and girls. But do yourself a favour. Go and buy his book, Flat Out, Flat Broke. It's the funniest thing you'll ever read. See you next time.